we went there on a Blanton's day. That's probably as a bigger crowd you're going to get because of the, right. you know, the mystique of the horse, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you guys, there's plenty of bottles for you if you want to hit Buffalo Trace and get one of these bottles. So I think that's the one thing. I loved it so much, that whole process. A little sad I could only get one. That's okay. I totally get it. And it, again, it keeps the line moving and it keeps people happy and it takes away that, you know, that mad dash, that anxiety.
Yeah.
It just, you go there, you show up, you have a good time, you get a good bottle, you go home, right? You get a bottle you can't get pretty much anywhere else. Yo, it's fantastic to have you with us for another episode of the show. I'm Ryan O'Leary.
And I'm Mike Zika.
And this is the Bourbon Playbook.
It's another podcast in the basement.
Mike, we survived the Bourbon Trail. We're back. We're back in the studio. It's great to be home. The trip was fantastic. Knee-jerk reaction, the Bourbon Trail. My man, how are we feeling?
Better now. Yeah. Better now.
Fully recovered?
Yeah, I officially came out of the body bag.
It's the first time I've seen you in a body bag. I mean, I knew you loved bourbon before we went to the Bourbon Trail, but now I know, like, you really love bourbon. Like, you were like a 10-year-old at Disneyland, my friend. You never stopped. It was wild to watch you go and operate out there. It was next level, man.
It was sad. It was almost like, it's so true, right? I literally gave Kentucky everything that I had, knowing that it was a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. Plus, I know specific distilleries that I really wanted to hit up because they have some really good bourbon that I've always wanted to try before I buy. And that was my goal, is to go in there and be like, listen, before I buy this $200 or $300 or $400 bottle, I'd rather just pay $30 or $40 for a sample, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, kick myself in the balls later. So
yeah, you did. You left it all on the trail.
I did.
We could say that you left it all on the trail. It was a really fun trip, and I think we learned a lot, right? A learning experience. Your first time out there, it's just so much, right? And we started in Louisville with Whiskey Row. I knew Louisville is like more of a downtown like city vibe than Lexington is, but you get there and you're still thrown off when you're just, it's like blocks of tasting rooms, right? And there are some smaller distilleries like Michter's had, it's not their main like bottling facility, but they have a spot on Whiskey Row. We spent some time at Michter's, but we bopped around. There's just so much to see on Whiskey Row, but it's not what you picture in your head when you get there, right? And then you're in a city and you're just bopping around the different bourbon tasting rooms, and it was a vibe, right? What do you think of Louisville?
It was really cool, man. I didn't expect it to be like North Washington, downtown Minneapolis here.
Yeah.
Just one long street of, instead of bars, truly tasting rooms or distilleries, yeah. Which, I mean, for me, I was in heaven, let's be honest.
Yeah. You pop into Bardstown, try some bourbons, go across the street, you're at Michter's, try some bourbons, and you just keep doing that as you bounce around. And then you know, we head out to Lexington. We pass a bunch of distilleries on the way, including like, you know, the exit for Woodford, the exit for Jim Beam, the exit for Wild Turkey, the exit for Buffalo Trace. And you get to Lexington and you double back and you kind of hit those ones, which is what we did. Two different cities separated by an hour, all about bourbon, but different vibes. Right. And it was that was pretty fun to see. But I think we learned a lot the first trip out there. I think I know now, like, you got to plan to hit Buffalo Trace every day, right? We didn't do that.
Yes.
And I think when it's close enough, you got to go there for their drops, right? I think the one thing that we loved most about Buffalo Trace is that they drop allocated bottles every single day. And, you know, everyone there is going to get one. It's not like you're, you know, we went there when they dropped Blanton's and Eagle Rare on the same day, on a Sunday. And it was a pretty laid back, cool atmosphere, even with all those people. You got hundreds of people waiting in line, going into the distillery, getting their bottle, plenty of bottles on the shelf. We went in, bought our bottles, put them in the car, did a tour, did some other stuff for the pod, went back into the gift shop, still tons of bottles of Blanton's and Eagle Rare everywhere, right? At MSRP. So, Yeah, I think if there was one thing I wish we did is I wish we went to Buffalo Trace more instead of the two times we went as we caught on. I wish we would have went there every day. We probably could have came home with some like Weller Special Reserve or something. But, you know, we were able to come back with a decent haul, right? Blanton's Eagle Rare, E.H. Taylor. So we got some good bottles that, you know, you just can't find around here unless you're going secondary. And speaking of that, Zika, which bottle did you bring down to the basement?
This bottle is a fan favorite. It's fantastic for me. It's one of my favorites personally on the shelf.
Same.
It's a 10-year, 90-proof bourbon called Eagle Rare.
Eagle Rare.
So it is,
let's
yeah.
go.
They are not responding to the pageantry
at all.
The whole
second verse is completely ridiculous.
The second verse is necessary to clarify what we
are.
We're mic'd.
We're mic'd. We're not... Our microphones are on.
Are they hearing this?
Do this routine.
Go.
I love the kind of phrase for this. Smooth, but not soft. Complex without being cocky. So this one is definitely more on the elegant side, but it's something that is worth always having on your shelf. And if you ever see it for MSRP, always highly recommend picking it up.
Yeah.
The store picks are fantastic too. They're a little bit unique in their own experience, just like every store pick is, but they've been known to have fantastic store picks as well. I feel like Total Wine here in the Twin Cities and Midwest will drop a store pick probably every other month. So all depending, but regardless, Eagle Rare, can't go wrong, my friend.
Yeah. No, it's from being on the trail. You know, we did as much as we could in, you know, 4 or 5 days, whatever it was while we were out there. I don't think our bodies could take any more. Just like a lot of drinking bourbon from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. type deal, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like Buffalo Trace is dropping like Pappy or anything like that, right? But it's like Eagle Rare, Blanton's, E.H. Taylor, Weller. It sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like they kind of rotate through those four bourbons. They drop one each day and they build excitement, right? You show up, you know you're going to get one of those bottles. You know you can't find that one. You know you're going to get it at MSRP and you can't find it at home unless you're paying double, right? Double MSRP on the secondary. And you go there, you get to go into their gift shop, you get the cool bottle, you go put it in your car and you just feel great. You feel great. And they create that experience for you at Buffalo Trace. So, I mean, the distillers we visited, man, Willett, top notch, right? I love the vibe at Willett. It was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, especially we went to Heaven Hill, then the Willett. And could you find two more different distilleries, right? Heaven Hill talked about their mass production and Willett talked about how they produce like 40 barrels a day, right?
Yeah. It's like Willett mentioned roughly about 50 a day. Whereas Heaven Hill mentioned just over 1500.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So such a different vibe. And you go to Maker's Mark and it's just gorgeous grounds. You know, they really did a great job on their tour. We'll get into more of that in a future episode. Then you go to Woodford, right? They literally drive you through these like picturesque horse farms, right? You just got horses and
beautiful
fences and land. And then boom, you pop up at Woodford. It's this beautiful, like really inviting family kind of atmosphere. We were there with Jules. So he was having fun. He was killing ants while we were trying the double oaked.
Crushing it, man. Yeah. It was perfect.
Yeah. But that's my only like nitpick with the Bourbon Trail, right? Is we tried the Woodford double oaked, the 2023. It was fantastic for me. Probably would have been, and you know that's up my alley, right? Woodford. I'm a Woodford guy. I'm an oaky guy. I would say Woodford double oaked, the one I tried, would probably be bordering on Precious Pour for me. I would have a hard time opening that if I got my hands on a bottle. The problem was, even in the Woodford distillery, I could not buy any of the double oaked series. None of them were there. So the fact that Buffalo Trace does drop those allocated bottles, it makes you feel like, oh, I'm coming home with stuff that I can really spruce up my bourbon shelf, make it look really cool, put my Buffalo Trace products up there, you know. I just feel like they're just one step ahead of the game, which is why Buffalo Trace has the, you know, the aura that it does, I guess, in the bourbon world.
Absolutely. And I, you know, if I had to throw tomatoes at one thing, it would definitely be sampling some very good bourbons and still not having them available outside of like the stuff I can find at Total Wine. I thought, hey, I'm in Kentucky. I'm going to the distillery. There's got to be like a back room next to the tasting room that they have, you know, highly allocated bottles. And that was just non-existent.
Right.
Like not even close. And even in some of the sampling rooms, like specifically Heaven Hill, they didn't even have like Heritage Farms or or Parker's Heritage or
Old Fitzgerald,
yeah. Like some of their like staples. And I'm just, and I was super stoked because that was like the first distillery tour that we had and just none of that. Like they did let us sample the Heaven Hill 19 year.
It was 18.
18 year.
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, it's one of my favorite pours personally.
It was good, but it was very small.
But
sample.
But yeah, it was like a thumbnail. It was a little sliver, man.
A little less than a half ounce, I would say.
Yeah, she's like, I'll never forget. She's like, try not to, just coat your mouth. Try not to drink all that on the first sip. She's like, it's definitely, you've got a couple sips in there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah, some of the tasting experiences out there, I don't want to say that's not worth it, right? Because I thought the tours were fun, and I thought the tasting experiences were really fun, and they were different in every distillery has its own vibe. We did a ton of tours and a ton of tastings. But yeah, I mean, some spots have, you know, they give you a little bit more. Some give you a little bit too little. Buffalo Trace, my only nitpick with them is that they don't even give you Glencairns. They give you these like little plastic cups and tell you, oh, you could take these home as a souvenir. It's like, what? Like these little tiny plastic cups with just a little bit of juice in them. And it's like, and again, complimentary tour for us. That's at Buffalo Trace.
Thing, yeah.
Had a great tour guide, Meredith. What's up? You took care of us. But, you know, I thought, you know, the tasting experience at Buffalo Trace, you know, we're gonna show Buffalo Trace a lot of love in this episode covering Eagle Rare. That was our favorite experience by far because of the allocated bourbons that they drop. It's just really fun, that camaraderie and that atmosphere they create. You feel like you're punching a lottery ticket or cashing a lottery ticket or something. You know what I mean? When you go in there, you just feel like, oh man, you feel so good about yourself. But the tasting experience, I don't know. They threw a vodka in there on us, and you know, it's not like they were throwing E.H. Taylor out there and Weller on the tasting. We got to taste Eagle Rare, which is cool. But you know, I thought that the tasting experience at Buffalo Trace left a little bit to be desired, although the tour was fantastic.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, you know, they did give us a sample of the vodka, right? And I think that's just a newer spirit that Harlan Wheatley kind of has as his baby, the head distiller there. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that is new to Buffalo Trace. And it's like, hey, can we branch out? Is this going to work or is it not? Meredith, our tour guide, did a fantastic job of explaining that the less expensive vodka that we tried was 10 times filtered. And then they have one that's also over 150 times filtered. So even the one that we tried through that filtration process, I thought it was actually a really smooth vodka.
It was smooth.
But like, it's vodka at the end of the day.
It was vodka. Yeah, it's vodka. Not what you're expecting, but I mean, we both agreed we'd rather have that than Traveler. So we'd rather have that than Traveler. So
preach.
That was fine. But yeah, I think, you know, if you're going to nitpick Buffalo Trace a little bit, I would nitpick that tasting experience. You know, maybe throw some Glencairns out there. Throw a little bit more juice in the glass, you know. But again, complimentary. So I can't complain too much.
I feel so unsatisfied.
And one other thing that you touched on was kind of the experience, right, of kind of like getting in line, getting that bottle. One thing that stuck out to me, genius marketing, because as you're in line, everybody's kind of talking like, oh, what's a drop today? Yeah. What's it going to be?
Yeah,
right?
I saw on Facebook this. I heard that.
And yesterday they dropped this. And now, you know, today, hopefully, cross our fingers, it's going to be that. It's really cool because if you go to their website, they'll literally post exactly what bottles they have available. And right. Then you're kind of crossing your fingers like, oh, are we going to get both a Blanton's and an Eagle Rare? Or is it going to be like limit one or the other, you know? And those are like, oh, there's a bunch of rumors circulating and everybody's kind of crossing their fingers. So it builds that momentum, and it's something that I think is like truly special. It's a great experience, and it's like icing on the cake for what's to come, like the tours and the whole facility and the whole nine, right?
Nothing like it. And yeah, you literally go on their gift shop page on their website and you scroll and see what's in stock, and they'll change Eagle Rare from out of stock to in stock, or Weller Special Reserve from out of stock to in stock. And then you can kind of tell what's now in stock. And
every morning.
It's in stock. And they do it every morning. And there's usually a different bottle, I think, every single morning that they drop. And we went on a Sunday when they literally dropped both Eagle Rare and Blanton's. That was kind of a special day. Everybody was in a good mood. Everybody got, and you know what? They also do a good job of we're going to scan your license, put a wristband on you. It's one per person. And I think Meredith told us that it's one per person for 90 days.
Every 90 days, yep.
So our license, because they scan our license, they know that Mike Zika and Ryan O'Leary purchased a bottle of Blanton's, and we can't do that again for 90 days.
And then they scan that wristband at the checkout counter,
right.
And that's when they say, you know, approved or, you know,
yeah. So
put that shit back.
It's a system that really you can't buy more than one.
No.
It's a good system.
It is.
And what it does is it takes out some of the hostility, right? And just creates this really fun vibe, right? Like, I remember as a kid when the big action figures, the big Power Ranger action figures Zika came out. I think my dad took us to Kmart. You know, have you ever been to a Kmart?
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Are they even existing?
I don't know.
I think
I think they only exist as like an empty plaza with like, you know, you could, a faded K on the top of the building.
They're now like mega churches.
I remember my dad taking me to Kmart. We waited in line outside. They opened the doors. There was like this big metal case of Power Ranger action figures. And they weren't set up on a shelf or anything. They were just in a big case. And you had to run over there and just try to get one color, whatever you could grab. And I remember like grown ass adults knocking me as like a 10-year-old out of the way, like elbows and like getting forearm shivers and like, you know, stiff arms, whatever you want to say, you know. But, you know, me and my brother were little, so we could kind of get through all the crazy adults, and we came home with some Power Rangers and we felt great. But it was like you were worried, like in line, you're like, shit, am I going to get one?
Yeah.
And my day going to get ruined? And because of their system at Buffalo Trace, you don't feel like you're not going to get a bottle, right? And you shouldn't, because again, there were people that lined up early, and you can get there 2 hours before the place opens. You can wait in line if you want to do that. We probably got there like 20 minutes before it opened, got in line. There was a couple hundred people in line, but we probably waited for like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Got in there, got our bottles, did the tour, went back to the gift shop, still stocked, still people coming in, and eventually those all sold out, we heard. But you're going to get a bottle. You're going to get a bottle if you show up in the morning. Anytime in the morning, anytime before noon, I would say. You know, we went there on a Blanton's day. That's probably as a bigger crowd you're going to get because of the,
right.
You know, the mystique of the horse, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you guys, there's plenty of bottles for you if you want to hit Buffalo Trace and get one of these bottles. So I think that's the one thing. I loved it so much, that whole process. A little sad I could only get one. That's okay. I totally get it. And it, again, it keeps the line moving, and it keeps people happy, and it takes away that, you know, that mad dash, that anxiety.
Yeah.
It just, you go there, you show up, you have a good time, you get a good bottle, you go home, right? You get a bottle you can't get pretty much anywhere else. It's great, unless you're working the secondary. My only thing is I wish we went every single day that we were out there. You know, we went the final 2 days of our trip. We went last day. You made a mad dash before your flight to make sure you got an E.H. Taylor there right before it was E.H. Taylor day. We're like, well, we're going, baby.
Yep.
And here we come. And that's my only thing is I wish we would have went there more and maybe got us a Weller or something, but it was fantastic.
I mean, we still got the, you know, 375s Weller. So they did have Weller on the shelf, but it was just a little kind of pocket shooters, you know?
I know. They look like a flask. It's cool.
Flask.
We got the flasks of Weller Special Reserve, and we were able to get multiple of those. Yeah. So
just the overall number of unique bourbons at Buffalo Trace, like the Eagle Rares and the Blantons on the shelf.
Yeah.
We're talking like literally thousands, you know, and they're, as soon as we're grabbing them off the shelf, like when we get in there, they have multiple tables, multiple shelves with Eagle Rare and Blantons. I've just never seen so many bottles of Eagle Rare and Blantons at one time. And it's just like, take one off, they got another guy stocking with another box, you know, and they just keep, it's such a well-oiled machine over there.
It is.
And it's a fascinating experience.
And I almost feel like, I don't know this for a fact, but I almost feel like they keep it stocked. So if you go, you can get a bottle. And then at the end of the day, when it's closing time, they pull them off the shelf.
I wonder. Yeah.
I almost feel like that's it, but it is fun. Like, you got some on the wall. You got some on these racks in the middle. You got some on a table. Like, yeah, they're everywhere. And again, it's just that the vibe is so cool. They get you fired up. You get your bottle. You feel great. And then you start buying other shit in their gift shop. They do a great job of that. We both spent a lot of money in their gift shop. And we're not sad about it. We're not sad about it at all.
No.
All right, man. You want to get into Eagle Rare?
Lego. All right, bourbon of the week. So Eagle Rare 10-year MSRP, 45 to 55. I believe it was, what, $45.99 at the distillery?
Another thing that Buffalo Trace does a good job of is you're so excited that you don't even look at the price. You just grab it.
Exactly.
I remember Blanton's a 72.
Yep.
I can't remember what E.H. Taylor or Eagle Rare was. I just snagged it and I was on cloud nine.
Yeah, I think it was $43.99.
Yeah, that sounds right. It was in the 40s. It was in the 40s. I think E.H. Taylor was in the 50s.
Because ER right now is dropping at Total Wines for about $54.
Okay.
So it's a little $10 over.
Another huge feather in the cap of Buffalo Trace is the prices are, you're not going to find those prices anywhere else. They don't upsell you at all. You know, you can buy the regular Buffalo Trace bottles for what, $27 a pop?
Yeah.
Right? So you almost think about going out of there with a box. You could have.
Yeah, you could.
I thought about it for a hot minute, but I'm like, that seems aggressive. It seems a little aggressive, but that MSRP is that's a great price. You find Eagle Rare for $45, you're feeling pretty good about yourself because you could turn around and sell it for probably double if you wanted to.
Right.
But not us. We're popping it open.
Absolutely. No sleep for the wicked, man.
Nope.
This is a good pour.
Yep. Absolutely.
So yeah, again, MSRP 45 to 55. Proof, we're looking at 90. Distillery location, Frankfort, Kentucky. So the Buffalo Trace Distillery under the hierarchy of Sazerac. So moving on to the Bourbon Cred Awards and Bragging Rights, a couple things specifically tailored to Eagle Rare. They won a double gold at the San Fran World Spirits Competition in 2019, gold medal at the New York International Spirits Competition in 2020, and consistently ranked as a top 10 bourbon under $50 by Breaking Bourbon and Whiskey Advocate. And quick, before we go on to the regular programming with the history, quick Patreon shout out, pouring this one out with gratitude. Thanks Auntie G and Uncle Pete for the donations this past week. Definitely appreciate you guys fueling the Brown Juice Fund.
We needed it.
Absolutely.
After this past weekend.
It is
depleted.
It's red.
It's in the red.
We're redlining for sure.
Yeah, the bourbon fund needs funds.
No, we appreciate you guys. Thanks for the donation. Pouring on to you guys. Cheers.
Yep. Cheers. And again, that you can also donate if you want to. If you enjoy the show, we appreciate that. tbplaybook.com.
Are you ready?
I can't wait. Story time.
Story time. Bourbon story time. The rise of Eagle Rare. So let's rewind the clocks back a little bit to 1975. Gerald Ford is in the White House. Jaws, the movie, is literally terrorizing theaters.
Such a classic.
Somehow disco is still a thing. I remember my dad. I mean, this was his jam, right? But the thing is, in the bourbon world, it was known as the Dark Ages. So sales are down. Vodka and tequila are stealing the spotlight. And most distillers are literally clinging on to whatever shelf space that they've got left. So speaking of the 1970s, I did a little digging to see what exactly people drank back then. So the most sought after spirits of the decade in the 1970s were vodka.
Yeah, that'd be my guess.
Yep, Absolut and Smirnoff, Scotch whiskey, because of the brands of Johnny Walker and Chivas Regal, gin, because of that martini era, and then bourbon was just only seen as like an old fashioned, right? And then ultimately tequila kind of started creeping in as well due to the like margaritas and rock and roll kind of vibe. Now looking at the 1980s, vodka dominated, continued to dominate. You know, we're looking at Grey Goose, Belvedere eventually came, but it was more Smirnoff and Absolut still. Cognac and brandy started gaining some traction among like the wealthier urban drinkers, but also within the black communities with the emerging hip hop kind of culture. And then also came the scotch and single malts. Those started gaining a little bit of prestige, like the Macallans, but especially the wine coolers, right? Yes. Like, I mean, this
as kids, like this is like kind of the stuff that you started on. You'd steal your mom's wine cooler.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So nasty.
Yeah. Oh, it's like a, hey, sign me up for a hangover in 27 minutes. Yeah. And actually, it's funny, Blanton's launched in 1984 with kind of a quiet start, and it kind of flew under the radar. So moving on to the 1990s, this is kind of when the cocktail renaissance begins, right? So we're talking vodka martinis, Cosmos, think like Sex in the City, kind of those flavor vodkas exploded, craft cocktails, you know, the single malt scotch was still kind of that snobby collectible, Macallan 18, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then tequila got an upgrade. Patron debuted in 1989 and slowly started to kind of reshape tequila's image. And then bourbon started kind of stirring again. So, right, think like Booker's, Knob Creek, and Baker's. They all launched in the 1990s under the Jim Beam small batch collection, kind of laying that groundwork. Fast forward to the mid to late 2000s. Here comes the bourbon boom. The catalyst? Mad Men.
Making an old fashioned?
We're on the same mission. This bar looks like it was set up by a blind man, and there's no bourbon.
The show?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They glamorized whiskey drinking. So this was kind of the rise of craft cocktails, and it put them on the map in a big way. Also, you know, Buffalo Trace Antique Collection and the Pappy Van Winkle started gaining this almost cult status. Limited edition releases, creating that hype and scarcity, which we still see here in 2025. Mm-hmm. And then by the 2010s, bourbon wasn't just back. It was hot, right? So we're talking allocated bottles, bourbon festivals, collector communities, high-end secondary markets. And then it also appealed to global markets. So Japan, Europe, Australia, everybody kind of caught on to this bourbon boom. And then suddenly, Wild Turkey was cool again. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and it's, I think for me, it's so true, right?
Yeah.
Like, again, one of the first bourbons I ever tried was Wild Turkey 101. And now I'm like, I actually kind of enjoy it, right? But all that being said, going back to the 1970s, there was one bourbon that dares to fly against the wind, and it wasn't made for the party crowd. It was made for those who believe that bourbon still had class. Enter Eagle Rare. So let's break it down, kind of who's behind it, how it came about. To start things off, let's talk about Charles L. Beam. Yeah, that's the man behind the pour that we probably all know. He's a Beam, born into the royal family of bourbon, right? But he was currently working at Seagram's in the mid-70s. Charlie set out to prove that age and quality still mattered, even though at the time, truly nobody was even looking for it for it.
This is where we're winding back to the dark days now.
Correct.
Right? This is the
truly the dark
days.
Yeah. Yep. So Eagle Rare was his answer. So it was a 10-year, 101 proof, launching at the time when age whiskeys were about as cool as a cassette tape, right? I mean, it wasn't just bourbon. This was truly a statement at the time. So on the name Eagle Rare, it was designed to really scream like American pride while kind of subtly hinting at, hey, this can be an everyday pour as well. So originally released by Seagram's in 1975, Eagle Rare was basically an outlier in every sense. So high proof, long aged, and sold during a decade. Again, we talked about the dark ages where, you know, most people were watering down their spirits and chasing after mixers, right, for literally several decades. So the brand did change hands over the time, but it eventually kind of landed with Buffalo Trace in 1989. Then it was actually called George T. Stagg Distillery, and that kind of marked the shift specifically with this bourbon, not just in proof, but they eventually dropped it down to that 90 proof where it sits today. Now under the Sazerac umbrella, Eagle Rare finally got that spotlight that it deserved. So Eagle Rare bottles are totally different label-wise. They actually even ran ads in the 1980s calling it a rare breed of bourbon, which is actually really funny because Wild Turkey eventually trademarked that phrase and took it for themselves. So if you look
rare breed.
Yeah, correct.
Wild Turkey rare breed.
Exactly. So today, kind of looking at the modern connection, today Eagle Rare 10-year is still produced at Buffalo Trace Distillery using that low rye mash bill number 1. So it's aged in specific rick houses with kind of a tighter barrel selection to ensure that consistency. And behind this is the master distiller, Harlan Wheatley.
The vodka man.
The vodka boss. And he's definitely known for, I mean, his tradition, right, with kind of balancing science with good juice and keeping it consistent. So, yeah, you know, in summary, this isn't just a bourbon, right? It's kind of a mix of that 70s rebel with a Beam legacy and an Eagle that didn't just wait for bourbon to become cool again. It truly made it cool. And it was, again, it took a unique approach, did something different, and high risk, high reward. And I think it hit it on the head. And now it's the delicious juice we have today.
Love it, man. Eagle Rare. Let's open the bottle. All right. You know how we do this on the nose.
Not a lot of burn. It's something where you can definitely drive your nose into the Glencairn.
We opened it. This has been opened less than 24 hours ago.
As I pull my nose away from it, I can really smell those sweet cherry notes.
Yeah, man. You get this burst of sweetness and cherry on the nose.
All right, man. I think it's time for the moment of truth.
Moment of truth.
This to me tastes a little bit more oak and spice forward, like baking spices. I know it's a low rye. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that. I think it's below 20%. But for me, it goes kind of the oak caramel spice right up front. And the mid kind of hits with that like a little bit of cherry, a little bit of dark fruit, and then finishes spice with like a mid finish to me. I've definitely had, I feel like, better bottles of ER store picks. But I mean, this is right down the alley, like for a classic bourbon that's well balanced, that has depth to it, multiple tasting notes. It's ER, man.
Yeah. You know, you're looking for that sweet spice balance, that kick, that finish. I feel like this gets the job done, right? It's more than adequate for the price and the proof.
It is. I think it's well balanced. It's exactly what you think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It has the hype. I don't think there's any hogwash around this.
No.
And it's complex, depth, mid-finish. I mean, what people say is what you get. It's nothing that's like over the top by any means. But, I mean, like for a $50 bottle, $40 bottle, like this is exactly what I'd expect.
All right. Let me read off the tasting notes real quick just for the listeners. The nose, toffee, orange peel, toasted oak, and vanilla. So you were big on the vanilla, right?
Correct.
On the nose. Toffee is interesting. I almost expected to get the chocolate there on the nose. I felt like I hit chocolate on the nose, not so much on the palate. But on the palate, layered with caramel, dark chocolate, baking spice, and a touch of dried cherry. Soft entry building to a steady oak warmth. Definitely tasting some type of dark fruit on the back end with the spice. So yep. I totally get that. Dark chocolate, felt like I got more of that on the nose and the palate. You?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But the tasting notes don't lie, Zika. They Never. Don't. Mid-finish, as you said, oak tannins and a whisper of leather.
You ever rub your leather? You know, like just rub it, see how good it feels?
Cool looking bottle with its own little logo. At the Bald Eagle. It's almost July 4th. Here we go. Eagle Rare. It's a great pour. Go find yourself one. Just don't spend over $100 on it. I wouldn't go that far, but it is a fantastic bourbon. If you can snag it at MSRP, like we were able to do at the Bourbon Trail, thanks to Buffalo Trace and their allocated bourbons that they drop, do take advantage.
Done deal. So the mash bill, again, it's mash bill number one. So low rye, rumored to be actually less than 10%. And it's rumored, right, because they don't disclose their mash bill. But if we're looking at, you know, a 7 to 10% rye, the only other alternatives, typically, especially with a sweeter bourbon like this, is going to be either wheat or corn. Specifically with mash bill one, it's rumored to be around like 90% corn. So kind of fill in the blanks. There's going to be a little bit of malted barley, a little bit more rye, and then the rest of it, all corn.
It seems aggressive on the corn side, right?
It is. It's crazy. But
that's why it's a rumor.
Yeah, right.
Like, if I had to guess, I'd say like 75 to 80% corn, maybe a little bit of wheat in there. But who knows? I know. Nobody knows. It's one of the great mysteries of Buffalo Trace. I believe that there's not a ton of rye in there because the spice I get is almost, it's definitely baking spice. It's like cinnamon, something like that.
Yeah.
I get cinnamon a lot with Buffalo Trace products.
Just mentioned that.
Yeah. And I feel like I got it again in this, but on one of my sips at least. But that's interesting. Less than 10% rye, super high corn, a little bit of wheat, gives it that sweetness, that smooth finish. Makes sense. It checks out.
And again, mash bill number one, it's not just Eagle Rare, but we're talking all their flagship bourbons, or most of them, right? So Buffalo Trace, Eagle Rare, E.H. Taylor, Stag, Stag Junior, Benchmark, these are all mash bill one, but it all depends on where the layout is, where they're stored in the rick house,
yeah,
how long they're aged, the location, you know, the top, the bottom,
how long they're underwater during a flood.
Yeah, yeah. Truly, yeah.
All of this matters.
Seriously. So it's just crazy to me that they all have the same char level four. So it's the same recipe, but it's just, it's the subtleties of truly like nature,
yeah, you
know, that creates the differences between these juices.
Self five for the big dog.
All that said, now comes the tough part, for me at least, which is the E5 scale. Yes, Ryan, what's the E5 scale, man?
The essential five is going to be your daily dram, your impress my guests, your budget blend. Those three, I think, also kind of speak for themselves. And then you got your Saturday Night Sipper, a bourbon that is just fantastic and one that you'll drink it maybe once a week. You're not afraid to open that bottle. You'll drink it. It's a hell of a bourbon, but you're not afraid to open it and enjoy it, right? You're not going to leave that thing sealed up on your shelf. I think Eagle Rare definitely fits that description. And then, of course, our fifth and final is the Precious Pour, not to be confused with the Elite Pour.
PJ Fleck.
What's up, PJ? Our guy, PJ Fleck. Your Elite Pour is your bourbon bottle that's on your shelf that you kind of refuse to open. I think when we look at the E5 scale for Eagle Rare, Zika, you usually have like three of them that you're wrestling with. And I usually make fun of you for that. I think you're going overboard with that. But I honestly think like there's three or four legitimate E5 scale options for Eagle Rare. Daily Dram, though, it is very hard to find. It's a heavily allocated bourbon. Eagle Rare, I mean, I remember back in the day in New Hampshire, you could find it on the shelf every now and then for like $35 back in the day. Like we're talking 10 to 15 years ago, probably. But I remember seeing Eagle Rare. I remember picking up bottles on the shelf in New Hampshire. Not anymore. New Hampshire, Minnesota, can't find Eagle Rare. You got to go to Buffalo Trace to get it at MSRP. So highly recommend, by the way. If anyone's driving through Kentucky, make sure you hit Buffalo Trace. You might get an Eagle Rare.
Got to.
Got to do it. So I think Daily Dram, MSRP makes it a Daily Dram for sure. Like I would drink this one daily. It's just you can't find enough, right? You're not going to get a box of these. So I think Daily Dram, I got to eliminate it.
I'd love to call this a Daily Dram, even if it was $50-$55. That's probably the max I'd go. But yeah, it's fantastic. You're not going to find it here. It's just, you're not. And if you do, you're in the bourbon game. You got a tip from a buddy. You're, you know, looking at the website, Total Wine, every morning, see if they got it in stock on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays that they, you know, make their drops. But outside of that, I'm going to have to exit that from the list.
Yeah, I think Daily Dram is eliminated, but I think there are three that definitely hold weight here, right? You'd impress the shit out of your guests with this bottle. This is definitely an impress my guest pour. Everybody knows the Buffalo Trace line. Everybody knows Eagle Rare. If you haven't had it, you want to, right? You want to try it. So impress my guest makes sense. But for me personally, I think it, and I would understand if it's an impress my guest for you, Zika, especially I know you have store picks on your shelf that you probably like more than this one that we tried tonight. But for me, it definitely falls more in the Saturday Night Sipper Precious Pour bucket for me personally. This is just, it's one of my favorite bourbons. The price is fantastic and the allocation is legit, right? You just can't find this one. I don't think I would pay, I'm not going to pay $100 for this bottle. So when I can get it, it's going to be kind of rare, right? It's going to be rare that I can find it. I think Precious Pour, that's going a little too far. You know, it's a 90 proof. It's a great bourbon. But I don't think it's one that you're like, you're afraid to open or something. You know, it's not one that you're going to make a ton of money trying to flip it on the secondary or something. You might make $40 or something. If that's what you want to do, do it. For me, I'd rather open it and drink it because it's great bourbon. So I think for me, it's a Saturday night sipper. You could definitely impress your guests with it. But if I had a group of people come over for, the Stanley Cup finals or whatever, I'm not bringing out the Eagle Rare for them. You know, I'm going to hide it in my shelf. So for me, it's a Saturday night sipper for me and the wife.
I love that play. And what I think of is kind of my journey over the past like 5 to 7 years getting into bourbon. Probably the first 3 or 4 years, this is a Saturday night sipper. That's a perfect pick. If you're newer to the bourbon game, this is like, you know, year one or two, this is exactly what I would go to if, you know, I got a nice night with Liz and she wants to have, you know, a dram or, you know, something like that. This would be a fantastic bottle to break out. And I still might with her, you know, or KDK or yourself. But now that I've obviously expanded my collection, especially after this weekend, I think like when I go like on a fishing trip with the boys, right? And, you know, we break out some bourbon typically at the end of the night. And what I'm grabbing is an Eagle Rare. And I think it's in the name, Rare. It's a little bit more rare. And typically if you come across at least a lot of my friends and my family members, they know a decent amount about bourbon. So like you said, they've heard of Buffalo Trace. They've heard of Eagle Rare. They've probably had it once, maybe twice, maybe three times. But outside of that, it's like, man, I haven't had this for a while. I've never seen it on the shelf. I'm like, hey, thanks for bringing this. This looks like a delicious bottle. I'd love to dive into it, right? This is one that you bring on a trip and you're not going to return with it, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe keep the cork for, safekeeping. But outside of that, you're not coming home with anything else because it'll be gone by the end of the trip, right?
Yeah.
And it's one that you're going to have to tell your friends, oh, you haven't tried bourbon or you don't drink bourbon that much. Well, let's not mix it with a cocktail. Let's just try it neat, right? Other than that, everybody else is going to drink it in a dram, enjoy it, and, you know, give them a little background on the story of it. It's pretty cool. You know, it started off on the Beam side and then went to the, you know, ultimately under the Sazerac umbrella, which is super cool. So for me, impress my guests, hands down, that's my final answer.
I understand why you're doing that. I just feel like, you know, I'm not sure when this is gone. I'm not sure when it's going to be back on the shelf again, you know? So it's one that I would probably not be so excited to share with the folks just because, you know, I enjoy this one. Let's be honest. Like I would pull out like the Basil 10 before I'd pull out the Eagle Rare for the guests. You know what I mean?
You know, what would be fun is to break out the Basil Hayden 10 year, set that 80 proof and then be like, yeah, this is a 10 year. And then compare it to Eagle Rare 10-year after that.
Yeah.
Boom. I think that'd be a fantastic pairing. And then you'll get the two different profiles, 10-proof difference. You start off with the basil, and then you finish with the 90-proof ER. I think that's a home run.
We'll do this each, you know, we'll have more episodes where we break down our experiences at the specific distillery. And next week, we're dipping wax.
We may be dipping wax, or we're going to be covering something that has been finished in French oak staves. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a good app.
All right. Yeah. We don't want to wax poetic about next week's pour, but you can put two and two together to figure out what we're talking about. But just to recap, we've got a bourbon with 10 years of age, a rebellious beam behind it, and a name that screams America.
It's bold, it's smooth, and it taught us two things. Bourbon never went out of style, and neither did Frankenstein at the pool.
Oh, no, yeah. Frankenstein would stay in the pool all day if you let him.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Cheers.